There was something about the slightly flattened tone of voice in which Sirius uttered Dumbledore's name that told Harry that Sirius was not very happy with the headmaster either. Harry felt a sudden upsurge of affection for his godfather. "At least you've known what's been going on," he said bracingly.
"Oh, yeah,"
said Sirius sarcastically. "Listening to Snape's reports, having to take all his snide hints that he's out there risking his life, while I'm sat on my backside here having a nice comfortable time. Asking me how the cleaning's going." "What cleaning?" asked Harry.
"Trying to make this place fit for human habitation," said Sirius, waving a hand around the dismal kitchen. "No one's lived here for 10 years, not since my dear mother died, unless you count her old house elf, and he's gone round the twist, hasn't cleaned anything in ages."
"Sirius,"
said Mundungus, who did not appear to have paid any attention to this conversation, but had been closely examining an empty goblet.
"This solid silver, mate?"
"Yes," said Sirius, surveying it with distaste. "Finest 15th-century goblin-wrought silver, embossed with a black family crest."
"That had come off, though,"
muttered Mundungus, polishing it with his cuff.
"Fred, George, no, just carry them,"
Mrs. Weasley shrieked. Harry, Sirius, and Mundungus looked around, and, a split second later, dived away from the table. Fred and George had bewitched a large cauldron of stew, an iron flagon of butterbeer, and a heavy wooden breadboard, complete with knife, to hurtle through the air toward them. The stew skidded the length of the table and came to a halt just before the end, leaving a long black burn on the wooden surface. The flagon of butterbeer fell with a crash, spilling its contents everywhere, and the bread knife slipped off the board and landed point down and quivering ominously exactly where Sirius's right hand had been seconds before.
"For heaven's sake!" screamed Mrs. Weasley. "There was no need. I've had enough of this. Just because you're allowed to use magic now, you don't have to whip your wands out for every tiny little thing." "We were just trying to save a bit of time," said Fred, hurrying forward and wrenching the bread knife out of the table. "Sorry, Sirius, mate. Didn't mean to."
Harry and Sirius were both laughing. Mundungus, who had toppled backward off his chair, was swearing as he got to his feet. Crookshanks had given an angry hiss and shot off under the dresser, from whence his large yellow eyes glowed in the darkness.
"Boys," Mr. Weasley said, lifting the stew back into the middle of the table, "your mother's right. You're supposed to show a sense of responsibility now you've come of age." "None of your brothers caused this sort of trouble?"
Mrs. Weasley raged at the twins, slamming a fresh flagon of butterbeer onto the table and spilling almost as much again.
"Bill didn't feel the need to apparate every few feet. Charlie didn't charm everything he met. Percy..."
She stopped dead, catching her breath with a frightened look at her husband, whose expression was suddenly wooden.
"Let's eat," said Bill quickly.
"It looks wonderful, Molly," said Lupin, ladling stew onto a plate for her and handing it across the table. For a few minutes there was silence but for the chink of plates and cutlery and the scraping of chairs as everyone settled down to their food. Then Mrs. Weasley turned to Sirius and said,
"I've been meaning to tell you, there's something trapped in that writing desk in the drawing room. It keeps rattling and shaking. Of course it could just be a boggart, but I thought we ought to ask Alistair to have a look at it before we let it out."
"Whatever you like," said Sirius indifferently.
"The curtains in there are full of doxies too," Mrs. Weasley went on. "I thought we might try to tackle them tomorrow."
"I look forward to it," said Sirius.
Harry heard the sarcasm in his voice, but he was not sure that anyone else did. Opposite Harry, Tonks was entertaining Hermione and Ginny by transforming her nose between mouthfuls, screwing up her eyes each time with the same pained expression she had worn back in Harry's bedroom. Her nose swelled to a beak-like protuberance like Snape's, shrank to something resembling a button mushroom, and then sprouted a great deal of hair from each nostril. Apparently this was a regular mealtime entertainment, because after a while Hermione and Ginny started requesting their favourite noses.
"Do that one like a pig snout, Tonks."
Tonks obliged, and Harry, looking up, had the fleeting impression that a female Dudley was grinning at him from across the table. Mr. Weasley, Bill, and Lupin were having an intense discussion about goblins.
"They're not giving anything away yet," said Bill. "I still can't work out whether they believe he's back or not. Of course, they might prefer not to take sides at all. Keep out of it."
"I'm sure they'd never go over to you-know-who," said Mr. Weasley, shaking his head. "They've suffered losses too. Remember that goblin family he murdered last time, somewhere near Nottingham?" I think it depends what they're offered, said Lupin. And I'm not talking about gold. If they're offered freedoms we've been denying them for centuries, they're going to be tempted. Have you still not had any luck with Ragnok, Bill?
He's feeling pretty anti-wizard at the moment, said Bill. He hasn't stopped raging about the Bagman business. He reckons the Ministry did a cover-up. Those goblins never got their gold from him, you know.